Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's a big political day on all three points of the tri-state triangle. Let's do a quick round robin to the three capitals to talk about the state of the state in New York, the gay marriage vote now scheduled for tomorrow in Trenton, and the new report out of Hartford that Senator Chris Dodd will not run for re-election this year. New York first, Irene Liu, Times Union political reporter and blogger for Capital Confidential, and Josh Robin, New York One political reporter, join us now. Hi, Irene. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Good morning, Brian.
Irene, it's not just another dire budget message from Governor Patterson in his State of the State today, but I gather a sweeping ethics reform proposal. Do you know the highlights?
Absolutely. This is probably the most ambitious proposal ever put forth by a governor in New York on ethics reform. It sets term limits. It limits campaign contributions for corporations and lobbyists. And as one goo-goo or good government advocate said, it's the kitchen sink and the stopper, which means that it will also have a very, very tough time going through the legislature.
So, Josh, term limits. There's also dropping the maximum campaign donation that any individual may make from $56,000, which it currently is, down to $1,000. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's right. And furthermore, I think the term limits one is maybe the most controversial one. The campaign contributions and matching donations from the state have been kind of part of the mix before, especially in the state assembly, and it seems to be gaining ground slowly in the state senate. But I'm not sure that this term limits is going to fly. You know, anyone who remembers, of course, what happened with Mayor Bloomberg this time around realizes that it's a pretty hot-button issue, and lawmakers themselves are not likely to instill term limits on themselves. Usually has to get done by some sort of referendum. The real question also is whether Patterson thinks that any of these are actually going to pass, or if he's just doing this to posture and look good as he tries to build up his poll numbers ahead of the election. If you ask a lot of lawmakers, they say he's just posturing and he didn't reach out and he doesn't really want a deal. He just wants to look good.
And in fact, Irene, we just spoke to Basil Patterson, the governor's father, from the funeral of Percy Sutton. And he supported his son with the term limits proposal, but he joked, if I was in the legislature, I would probably boo at the State of the State address today.
I mean, it is a very controversial. And what was interesting about these proposals was yesterday when members of the Patterson administration were interviewed about the various aspects of this proposal, they were unwilling to say that the governor himself would hold himself to these, to many of the things that he is recommending, including term limits. When asked, will the governor commit to only serving two terms if elected to governor, they were sort of noncommittal. So it's an interesting thing. You know, he isn't willing to sort of put his money where his mouth is on these aspects, and I think the lawmakers are sort of saying that this is pretty much a non-starter for them.
Gosh, I don't know why he would be reluctant to do that, even if a term limits measure doesn't pass, because when you consider that he hasn't yet been elected governor, right, he inherited it when Eliot Spitzer stepped down, he would still have two terms 8 years after this year to serve, even by that voluntary standard. That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and so what, again, as Josh was saying, many are questioning the seriousness of these recommendations. I mean, of course, in the State of the State, the governor doesn't have a whole lot of options. I think that, you know, governors around the country are facing really dire state budgets. And, you know, usually the bread and butter of a lot of these speeches are sort of setting the agenda, introducing proposals. And, of course, in this kind of climate, when we only have $1.2 billion in cash in the coffers, it's very tough to be able to introduce a lot of sort of sweeping spending programs, which is what a lot of governors have done in the past. You know, one of the criticisms that Patterson has had in regards to his proposals for ethics legislation is this matching campaign financing was a proposal that the governor himself criticized because he said the state doesn't have the money to do it.
Josh, I know it's easy to be political about this and say, oh, yeah, the governor's proposing term limits and ethics reform so he can look tough when the legislature is doing what it does and his poll numbers are so low. But this is a big issue in Albany that the three of us have been talking about for years. And isn't this really what got Elliot Spitzer elected in the first place? He was going to be the sheriff of Albany and, you know, come in and clean up the special interest cesspool in Albany. So it's not like David Patterson is making this up.
No, it's hard not to be cynical and political about it, because I do think that there's a strong political calculus to it, too. Not that Governor Patterson doesn't feel that these are important issues, but he sees an important time here. I mean, as bad as Albany has been for years and years, it seems to be particularly horrendous now. That it's just epitomized by formerly one of the top Republicans in the state, at one point the top Republican in the state, Joe Bruno, getting convicted on corruption charges. He's also, Patterson, taking away an issue that Spitzer's successor as Attorney General, Andrew Cuomo, has kind of been highlighting. He's sort of touting himself now, or has been, as someone who can come in and really clean up Albany. And Patterson has co-opted a number of issues that Cuomo has been raising in recent days in order to maybe get ahead of the story and become not just the person who the state needs to turn to for fiscal goodness, but also for ethical goodness.
And Irene, of course, the difficulty in getting ethics legislation through Albany was really one of the things that brought down Elliot Spitzer, because the way he went after Joe Bruno, who was resisting an ethics bill, caused the first Spitzer scandal. So these are choppy waters.
These are choppy waters, but I think that, as Josh was mentioning, a number of scandals that have tainted the legislature, the conviction of Joe Bruno, Anthony Seminario resigning, and others have actually put the legislature in a place where they really needed to do something this year. I think that there was wide recognition that the legislature, if only for appearances, would have to appear to be doing something to reform Albany. I mean, the elections from this past November have put the fear in the hearts of every incumbent, especially in the legislature, and I think that something was going to happen. It probably would have not been. It's certainly not as strong as what the governor's proposing, definitely probably not satisfactory to many of the good government reform advocates. However, you know, so this was sort of the perfect moment to do something. What's interesting about this also is, by including all the range of proposals, if the legislature does do something, the governor can certainly claim credit. He will claim credit and say, oh, well, you know, I put this as my agenda in the state of the state, and look, the legislature is doing something.
And the pressure is certainly on the legislature after all that's happened in the last couple of years. I mean, there are some people who want to start clean house campaigns, just encouraging all New Yorkers to vote against their incumbent legislator, no matter who, no matter of what party. So, I mean, that's the point that we're at in New York. Josh, people can really give $56,000 as a campaign contribution in New York?
Yeah, it's really incredible. I mean, just the amount of money that flows around Albany, and it kind of flies under the radar, because as hard as Irene and I and my colleagues in the Albany Press Corps try, you know, it's not, it doesn't have the same kind of attention that New York City does, where, you know, obviously there's still corruption here, but it gets much more attention from the market. There's a whole host of reasons as to why Albany is what it is.
And Irene, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the money seems to be a lot, but when you consider the scope of the type of spending, I mean, we have a roughly $130 billion budget. We're talking about programs that are billions and billions of dollars. So $56,000 is nothing compared to the cost, the potential gain, or the potential loss when programs are cut or, you know, or added.
I'll mention that WNYC will be streaming Governor Patterson's State of the State address live at 1 o'clock this afternoon on our website, WNYC.org. And I guess that's Patterson's underdog MO right now, running as the truth-telling budget hawk and clean government advocate against the recalcitrant legislature, and trying to fend off Andrew Cuomo and maybe Steve Levy and others in that way. So Irene Liu, Times Union political reporter and blogger for Capital Confidential. Josh Robin, New York One political reporter. Thank you both very much.
Thanks,
Brian.
And our tri-state political roundup moves now to Trenton, where the on-again, off-again vote on gay marriage is on again, and this time for sure in the state Senate tomorrow. With us now is Zachary Fink, State House correspondent for NJN News. Hi, Zachary. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you again, Brian.
Why will the Senate vote on gay marriage tomorrow?
Well, it has taken so many turns, it's very hard to keep track of this. I think the last time we spoke was last month. The bill had cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee by one vote, but was pulled by the sponsors because they didn't have the votes in the Senate. The thought was to go to the Assembly and try their luck there first. Well, it turns out there weren't enough votes in the Assembly Judiciary Committee where it would begin. Assembly Speaker Joe Roberts has now said that he can bypass that committee and bring it directly to the floor, but it needs to pass the state Senate first. So it basically goes back to where it was, and a vote has been scheduled for Thursday.
From everything I've heard to date, supporters do not have the votes. Is there any reason to think that has changed?
You know, it's. I think one of the sponsors has said repeatedly, you never know until you open up the board and you see where people are. Certainly the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and people who support this bill have been making a lot of noise and putting a lot of pressure on Democrats to stand with them on what they consider a very important issue, threatening to withhold fundraising to run primaries. I spoke to Steve Sweeney, who is the incoming Senate president, yesterday. He had previously said that he would be the 15th vote, but he would not be the 15th vote, but would be the 21st vote. 21 votes are needed for passage in the Democrat-controlled Senate. Yesterday, he used the word civil rights issue, which was interesting. It seemed to leave the door open a little bit. So it sounds like, you know, if there is a possibility to get there, the last I had heard, there were 16, maybe 17 votes. They're not that far away, I think, is the long and short of it.
Now, decode that term. He wouldn't be the 15th vote, but he would be the 21st vote. In other words, if it looks like it may actually pass, and he would be the 21st vote that would give it the majority, then Sweeney might vote yes. If it's going to go down and he's going to be the 15th vote in a losing cause, then he wouldn't put himself on the line for it?
That seemed to be what he had been saying at one point. He's from South Jersey. It's a relatively conservative district, and as much as you talk about Democrats, they have a sense of where their constituents are in this. So there are a lot of politicians, particularly Democrats, who have had great difficulty with this issue, on the one hand doing maybe perhaps what they think is right personally, but also following the will of the people who elect them.
Is there any horse trading on this? You know, when the New York legislature had this and it went down to defeat, there was supposedly some horse trading behind the scenes where people would vote for other people's bills if they came over and voted for gay marriage and that kind of thing. And a lot of that went under for exactly the reason that you just described with Sweeney's situation. When people saw that it wasn't going to get a majority, they kind of withdrew the deals because they didn't want to take political risk. Are deals like that being made? Do you see any quid pro quos here that you can put your finger on?
It's an interesting situation, Brian, because you're in a lame duck legislative session. So the legislature changes, the governor changes all this month. So pretty much the Senate and the Assembly are, the lame duck session is often characterized as finishing up unfinished business. So for the most part, the other bills are pretty much done deals. It's just formality of going through the processes. So this one is really the wild card, and it's a question, I think, of what they can really offer people. Really, what I have heard in terms of a change of tone has come from the supporters, the advocates, who have not only been threatening, there's been a lot of money being poured into this effort and threatening to run primaries against people who don't support it, but there was a letter sent out this week by 120 members of clergy who support this bill. You know, conventional wisdom would be that, and certainly the Catholic Conference and other religious groups, Hasidic Jewish groups, have been lobbying against this bill, but there's a lot of clergy in New Jersey who support it and who signed this letter, including Corzine's personal pastor, Governor Corzine's personal pastor in Summit, New Jersey.
Well, it's one of the myths about this issue, which is that religious organizations are against it. Some religious organizations are for it. Some religious organizations are against it. The Episcopal Church has divided over this and related issues globally. So it's something that divides religion. It's not religion versus gay marriage as such. Last thing, in New York, the defeat of the gay marriage bill in the state Senate last month is being seen as a setback that could delay consideration again by the legislature for years. Do supporters see anything to gain by voting and losing?
Yes, and I think it goes back to what we were just talking about a minute ago, that they want to get everybody on record here. Even if they feel as though it's going to go down, and it's hard to say at this point. I mean, I think what you said right in the beginning of our conversation, which is that the votes don't appear to be there, I think that seems still to be the conventional wisdom. However, there is certainly a faction and a strong faction within the Democratic Party that wants to get that vote on record no matter what.
All right, Zachary Fink, State House correspondent for NJN News. Vote on gay marriage in the Senate tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
And our tri-state political roundup moves now to Connecticut, where Senator Christopher Dodd is spreading the word that he will not run for re-election this year, ending a 30-year-long Senate career. To discuss that, we have John Dankosky, news director and host of the program Where We Live at WNPR, Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford. John, nice to talk to you again. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. Thanks so much, Brian. Appreciate it.
Is this decision by Dodd a surprise?
As one of our analysts on the show today said, it's a surprise and not a surprise, because Christopher Dodd has certainly gotten a lot of pressure in Washington and around the state to make this decision. He was trailing pretty badly both of the Republican candidates who were looking to challenge him coming up in 2010. Linda McMahon, a former wrestling CEO, that's Worldwide Entertainment, the wrestling company that's based here in Connecticut.
Related and to Vince McMahon, that McMahon?
Exactly, that's that same one. And
I knew that politics was not beanbag. I didn't realize it hadn't gone that far.
Yeah, but people hitting each other with chairs is exactly what it's become here in Connecticut. But so Linda McMahon was beating Christopher Dodd, and that certainly was a sign. He was also trailing by double digits in recent polls to Rob Simmons. Rob Simmons is a former congressman, a Republican who had lost his congressional seat a few years ago in the 2nd District. So those sort of numbers, very high, unfavorables for the first real time in Chris Dodd's career, made this in some ways an easier decision for him, but it still caught a lot of people by surprise today.
Were his poll numbers tanking because of his countrywide subprime mortgage problem?
Well, you know what? It all really started back in 2008, and it just seemed as though everything started to go wrong for Chris Dodd. He made a decision to run for president that a lot of people thought was a real long shot. And during that long shot campaign, he moved his family to Iowa. This ended up bringing up an awful lot of bad press coverage, people worrying about whether or not he was not paying attention to his job as senator in Connecticut, but also not paying attention to his job of head of the banking committee. And this is right in the middle of the financial meltdown. So while that was happening, of course, the AIG scandal came up. He was in the middle of that as to whether or not he allowed bonuses for AIG officials to go through. It also came up in the middle of that, that indeed he had gotten a loan deal from Countrywide. There's certainly some dispute as to whether or not that is something that he should have been implicated for. The Senate took a look at that. Regardless, it certainly hurt Chris Dodd's popularity in Connecticut as that happened. So there was Countrywide, there was AIG, and then in the middle of all this, his very best friend, the ailing Ted Kennedy in the Senate, gave him a very, very big job, which was to shepherd through this health care reform bill. And it seemed as though he got it exactly the wrong time, just as health care reform that the Democrats and Barack Obama wanted to put through became the most unpopular thing in the entire country. So he had all these things working against him starting in mid-2008, and he just couldn't recover.
So there is a Democratic heir apparent, isn't there, to step into Dodd's candidacy and wrestle Linda McMahon or Rob Simmons?
Yeah, it's interesting. Dick Blumenthal is the current attorney general. He's someone who's been in that post since 1990. Every single time there is any talk about a big statewide race, whether it's for governor or for senator, Dick Blumenthal's name has come up, reaching back as far as 2000. He's certainly someone who was talked about in terms of challenging Joe Lieberman, who very likely is going to run for re-election in 2012 as a Republican this time around. He was seen to be the Democratic front runner in that race. Now he's going to step in. The way this works today, Chris Dodd will announce sometime midday that he is stepping down. Dick Blumenthal, a few hours later, will announce he's getting into the race, and he becomes the prohibitive favorite in that race, certainly changing the dynamics of what's been a very contentious back and forth between the Republicans. It seems as though he's a very strong front runner to take over that Senate seat.
Why is Richard Blumenthal so popular in Connecticut?
He's been a crusading attorney general. He's very similar to what Elliot Spitzer was in New York, as a matter of fact, for years. Yeah, well, there is that. But no, Blumenthal essentially is a guy who takes on big corporate interests. It seems as though he's never found a television camera he doesn't like. He's able to get press out of just about anything. But people in the Democratic Party trust him. People in the Democratic Party like him. They see him as someone who's willing to take on big corporate interests, which is probably exactly the right tone at this very moment when you have sitting senators like Chris Dodd and Joe Lieberman who have had some controversy surrounding them because of some of the relationships they've had with big corporate interests. So in that way, Dick Blumenthal, a very, very polished politician, seemingly will have a pretty easy road to this election in 2010.
How's Joe Lieberman's popularity holding up in the state after he single-handedly killed the public option in the Senate health reform bill?
Well, you know, Joe Lieberman's popularity has been going down for a very long time. But what's really interesting about this is I took a look at Joe's popularity over the course of the last decade. And at the beginning of this decade, he was the most wildly popular politician in Connecticut history. 80% approval amongst Democrats, but also Republicans and independents liked him. And we've got more independents here in the state than anything else. And right now, Republicans like him every bit as much. Republicans favor Joe at around 75%.
He spoke in the 30s when it comes to
Democrats.
And, of course, we'll remember he spoke at the Republican convention last year and supported John McCain for president.
He spoke at the campaign, and he certainly has gone back and forth about whether or not he is a supporter of Barack Obama, whether or not he has views that support the public health care option. That has been in quite a bit of dispute. It's something that he supported up until not too very long ago. And so people still see Joe Lieberman as someone who changes his mind on things quite often, including changing his party, probably coming up very soon as well.
John Dankosky, news director and host of the program Where We Live at WNPR, Connecticut Public Radio. Christopher Dodd announcing his retirement at the end of this Senate of the session. Midday today. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
And that's our Tri-State Political Roundup on a day with major political news coming out of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And a reminder that coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon, we will be streaming the State of the State address from Governor Patterson live on our website. We'll have the Leonard Lopate Show, as usual, on the air, but we will have Governor Patterson's State of the State at 1 o'clock live on our website at WNYC.org if you want to hear it. And we thought that for a few minutes, with the State of the State coming and all these major ethics proposals reportedly coming from the governor today, we might take some calls right now from people anywhere in New York State on the State of the State according to you. So call us, New Yorkers. These are extreme times in New York State. These are extreme times financially. These are extreme times politically with all that's gone on in the last year with the legislature and resignation of Governor Spitzer before that. So how about the State of the State according to you in 60 seconds or less? And what do you think of these proposals from Governor Patterson? 212-433-WNYC, New Yorkers, 212-433-9692. Give us a call and talk about the State of the State and what you would like to hear Governor Patterson say at 1 o'clock this afternoon. His approval ratings are so low, he can only go up. People are saying that this is political anyway, this ethics proposal set, which would include term limits, by the way. Do you want to see term limits for legislators in New York? Is that the solution to our problem? If people don't have the will to vote out the incumbents, that the law should mandate it? Of course, we had the big conflagration over term limits in New York City just last year. 212-433-WNYC. Do you want to see term limits for New York State legislators? Do you want to see term limits for governor of New York? We just had two three-term governors in a row. Mario Cuomo served three terms and ran for a fourth and got defeated. That was a term limit established by the voters. Governor Pataki served three terms and didn't run for a fourth because his popularity had sunk to the point where he knew that he was not likely to win. Do you want to see term limits in New York? Would that make you feel more favorably toward Governor Patterson? What can he do to raise his approval ratings with you? Do you want to hear the governor reduce the allowable campaign contribution in New York State from $56,000, which it presently is, to $1,000 per donor and institute some public matching money in exchange for that? 212-433-WNYC, 9692 on the state of the state and the state of Governor Patterson. Tom in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Brian. I think that would be a great idea, first of all, the campaign contribution thing. If we can... If it's good for the federal level and the city level, it's certainly good at the state level. It's incredible.
Well, we don't have it at the federal level except for President of the United States.
Well, there you go. And to think that $50,000 or more doesn't actually get you some influence, it's very naive, and anyone who says it isn't. But I would like Patterson to take some credit for the things that have happened during his term so far. You had someone on last week talking about this, or the week before, about, you know, the finally dealing with the Rockefeller drug laws and several other things that have been pending for years and years and years that have finally come to completion during the time he's been in office.
Thank you for your call. Mike in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Brian. I'm a longtime listener. Thanks for your great show.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
But I want to say that Albany's broken, like the Times says, and I lobbied 15 years in Albany, and I have pens from three governors for legislation for men and women who serve this country in the armed forces, and New York has a psychosis about this, and I think it's not the governor. I think it's the individual members who local people can't let go. And I just want to put in a note to you and bloggers who I love, but Bloomberg got 5 votes on my machine in central Brooklyn when he was running, and the Democrats blew it because they don't know how to win.
Well, we also have brand new voting machines coming in. If you saw that article in the Daily News today, you have voted on the clunky lever machines for the last time. Mike, thank you for your call. We'll talk a lot more about the state of the state tomorrow when we play clips from Governor Patterson's speech and take a lot more of your phone calls. Coming up next, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Facebook's new privacy policy. Stay with us.